We live in a world today that anger in many places is out of control. I don't know if you've noticed it, but you can drive down the roadway and you can see people and you can interact with people and you might even be tempted to struggle with anger. You can visit your local Little League sports field and see parents and relatives, grandparents who are angry. You might find yourself in the aisle at Walmart or Lowe's looking for an associate, a sales associate, who can help you find what you're looking for, and you might be tempted to get angry or see a parent who's dealing with a young child and they're angry. We can watch a sports game and we can see the bench clear as professional athletes get angry, right? We can turn on the news and we can, right now especially, you can look and watch the news over in the Middle East or in our very own city of Chicago here in the United States, and you can see the results of people who have given in to anger, who are struggling with anger. The issue of anger is out of control in many places that we live. And anger is a social issue, isn't it? 5 million women will be abused this year in their home, and that doesn't even talk about the children who are in those situations. It's a social issue that we struggle with in our country. Not only is it a social issue, it's also a health issue, right? I mean, you know it, I know it, your doctor will tell you, if you struggle with anger, if you struggle with stress, you're going to have health issues, you're going to have heart issues, heart conditions, things that are going to make life unenjoyable, things that are going to make life shorter. It's a social issue. It's a health issue. Anger is also a religious issue. It is a lordship issue. Our passage today is going to talk about anger and how to deal with anger in healthy ways. And the reason I say that is because anger in it of itself, to give you a preview, is not necessarily a sin. But it's what we get angry about. It's how we act out in anger. That's when it can become a sin or not. So if you have your Bible with you this morning, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 and 27. We covered over this briefly last week. But Paul shares these words. Ephesians 4, 26 and 27. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. And do not give the devil a foothold. Friends, if we don't deal with our anger in healthy ways, in productive ways, Satan has a playground on which to play in our life. It is an inroad into our life if we don't deal with it in healthy ways. And so I think in our text today, I believe Paul shares with us four pretty practical, simple steps that we can use to deal with anger in healthy ways. And so the first thing that Paul shares with us about anger is we need to admit it. We need to admit that we get angry. We get angry, don't we? Now, show of hands, anyone in here not ever dealt with anger? Not ever dealt with the issue of anger? In the first service, 9 o'clock, I had someone raise their hand over here, and I said, "Brother, we need to get lunch sometime this week. I need to know your secret." After the service, he shared with me, "Seth, I wasn't paying attention. I thought you said, does anyone here struggle with anger?" And I was amazed. I was the only one raising my hand. We struggle with anger, don't we? We deal with it and we need to admit it. Friends, I have to tell you this morning, I struggle with anger. I get angry from time to time. I'm a husband, I'm a father, I work hard, things happen in life. You can ask my children, they'll tell you, yes, Dad gets angry sometimes. I make mistakes. I have a friend, we're still pretty close friends, but we haven't worked together in a number of years. We spent 7 years working together in Mexico, and you're going to hear a few stories about our time doing some mission work down there today. But we were in a children's home down there, and we were young, we were fresh out of college, and I have to tell you, if you've worked with children before, abandoned, abused, orphaned children, you know it is dark, hard work. It is difficult work. And, you know, we were in a school, we were teaching, and we had to deal with consequences and discipline in pretty creative ways. And there was one day that a young man, ninth grader, freshman, and he was dealing with some things in the classroom, and some consequences were merited. And so my friend said, "You know what, Daniel, we're going to go out here in the courtyard area, and I'm going to have you move this pile of bricks from here over to there. We've been wanting to get this pile of bricks moved." And, you know, he just needed something to get his mind off what he was struggling with that day. And so Daniel went out, and he began to pick up one brick at a time and walk it over to the corner and put it down and come back and get one more brick. He was doing what he was told to do, right? Well, my friend, you know, probably 22 at the time, we were young, remember, fresh out of college, ready to conquer the world, knew what we were doing. He goes storming out there and pretty well lost his temper. And he was, you know, talking to this young man, and I went out and I said, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Are you okay? I'm fine. I said, you don't look fine. You know, and he admitted at that moment, you know, I need to take a step back. I think the first thing that Paul says is we need to admit it. He says, in your anger, do not sin. You're going to get angry. I think we need to admit that we get angry at times. And again, it's not always a sin. It's what we get angry about. And it's how we react in anger that determines whether it's a sin or not. I want to challenge you with this. If you have a concordance at home, a Bible concordance, or if you're familiar with, you know, a tool online, just look up the phrase wrath of God. Not anger of God, not, you know, any other synonyms of anger or wrath, but just wrath of God. I think you'll find over 197 different occurrences of this phrase, wrath of God, in the Bible. In the Old Testament, just a few examples to share with you this morning. Psalm chapter 7, verse 11. God is a righteous judge, a God who expresses His wrath every day. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 13. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble and the earth will shake from its place at the wrath of the Lord Almighty in the day of His burning anger. And New Testament as well, not just in the Old Testament, but New Testament as well, we find examples. One from Romans chapter 1, verse 18. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. We can read about the wrath of God in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. It's a major theme throughout Scripture, not just about God Himself, but about Jesus as well. We covered these last week. Jesus got angry when He was here on earth. He got angry with the disciples in Mark 10 when they didn't let the children come to Him. He got angry with the people in the temple who were cheating people out of their money. They were trading in ways that were unfair to them and requiring these trades for temple uses, that sort of thing. But probably the most aggressive or harshest language, that's what I'm looking for, the most harsh language in Scripture is when Jesus got angry at the Pharisees, at the Sadducees, at the teachers of the law, the hypocrites who were playing religion. They were telling people, you know, you have to do this. They were forcing people, imposing upon them to follow their rules and their guidelines in order to be more holy. And Jesus got angry with them. We have to admit that anger, God got angry at times. Jesus got angry at times. We have to admit that anger in and of itself is not a sin. But the difference is, God never, you know, got controlled by His anger. His anger never got out of control. And so why does God make us capable to be angry? What's the point of being angry? Well, I would suggest to you this morning that a life incapable of anger may be deprived of the needful energy for reform. Meaning that if an individual is incapable of getting angry, passionate, aggressive about something, they may not have what's needed to make change in a certain situation. Now, we have this misconception at times. If I were to put two chairs up here, and I were to sit an individual in both chairs, and this individual, they're calm and collected and peaceful and compassionate and even maybe a little bit complacent at times. And then in this other chair, we'll put another individual who's aggressive and fiery. Maybe even a little arrogant or whatever it is over here. And we would say, well, who's the more godly? Most of us would probably say, well, this individual who's calm and collected and peaceful. But friends, that really has nothing to do with being spiritual or not, or being godly or righteous. It's not simply being more, you know, righteous is to be passive and unresponsive, or to be, you know, heated and fiery and capable of getting angry is less godly. No, because sometimes that's what it takes. A few examples. Read the prophets in the Old Testament. You'll come across some pretty fiery individuals, some pretty angry people at times. Read Paul, his writings in the New Testament. I think we can all agree these are people who are passionate, who are angry at times, who were fired up about what they were trying to teach and changes they were trying to make in line with God's promises, in line with Jesus' teachings. And we wouldn't say that Paul or the prophets were ungodly, would we? God uses anger at times through us. So right away we need to recognize anger can be. Anger is a God-given emotion. Sometimes we do get angry, and as long as we're angry about the right things and in the right way, reacting in the right way, that's okay. We'll delve that out a little bit more in a moment. But second of all, we need to understand it. We need to understand anger and what's healthy, what's not healthy. I mentioned last week briefly that there's a righteous anger. There's an unrighteous anger. So what is good anger? What is bad anger? Well, friends, bad anger, a sinful anger, is oftentimes selfish anger. Anger that's focused on me. Anger that's focused on me getting my revenge or me setting things straight. I've been hurt or abused or something is, I've been cheated in some way. And so I want to get mine, right? That's the sinful anger that we don't want any part of. Disregards other people. Maybe we're mad about something. We don't care about anyone else as long as we get what's right or what we think is right, as long as someone else gets what's coming to them. But not all anger is sinful anger. There are things that we're to be passionate about, things that we're supposed to be fired up about. Paul talks about it's this idea of being selfish. This is the idea. Being overly concerned about myself. You can take out your dictionary and look up the word selfish. What does it mean? It means too much or overly concerned with my own welfare. Nothing of someone else or not enough about someone else. It's all about me, me, me. Well, I've got to tell you, just because we're Christians and just because we're called to serve, not be served, but to serve, doesn't mean that we're supposed to be doormats either. It doesn't mean that we're supposed to let people just always take advantage of us. But when we pay too much attention to our needs and not enough attention to the needs of others, that's where we've crossed the line. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, perhaps you're familiar with these verses. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your interests, that's the key. Look not only to your interests, but also to the interests of others. Did you catch that? He doesn't say not look to your interests. He says, should look not only to your interests, but also to the interests of others. I think it's fair to say if something is in my best interests, and it's also in the best interests of the group, of other people, I can take a stand on this issue. I can be in the right. If this is in my best interest and in the best interest of others, I can be in the right. So righteous anger. We see it with God. We see it with Jesus. What are some examples? Well, again, our time in Mexico, the Mexican government would send us these children from, infancy up to 10 years of age at times. And they came with a case file, friends. And I mentioned abandoned, abused, orphaned children. You know what that implies. And I would read these case files, part of my responsibility there. And I have to tell you, I got angry. Angry with what these children went through. Innocent children. Innocent victims of parents or friends or even strangers. Abuse and treatment of these kids. We can talk about the topic of abortion today. And the killing of innocent lives, innocent children. And we need to be angry. We need to be passionate about those types of topics. Blatant attacks on God. We need to take a stand. But how we do so is just as important. Friends, just because I'm angry and passionate about children being abused and poorly treated in Mexico does not give me a green light to take out revenge and go seek out these people and do them harm. Just because we're angry and passionate about the topic of abortion does not make it okay to go bomb an abortion clinic somewhere. Or to go stand on a corner with an ugly picket sign. You know what I'm talking about. What we're angry about is just as important as how we react in anger. So we need to be angry about the right things in the right way. We need to be focused about that. Look at the word anger, and you know, I don't know what you'll think about this, but anger is just one letter away from danger, right? So if this helps you this morning, and when you're angry, you're thinking, wow, I'm sure close to being in danger. I need to take a step back. I need to calibrate myself. There are things that we're going to get angry about, and ways that we're going to react to that, and how we handle that is just as important. The next step, Paul says, don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. Deal with it. Deal with it. We've got to deal with our anger in godly ways. There's some things that we can get angry about, but we've got to deal with it in godly ways. There's a story about a lady who was known for her short fuse, her short temper. She got angry quite often. And someone finally asked her, do you always wake up grouchy? She said, no. Sometimes I let him sleep. Come on, yeah, you're okay. She didn't, you know, however you want to interpret that idea, she didn't deal with it, did she? Whether or not she was the angry one or her husband, spouse was the angry one, she didn't deal with it. She let him sleep. Paul says we've got to deal with your anger. We've got to deal with it promptly before the sun goes down. I suggested last week that that might mean if you're going to get angry, you need to get angry early in the morning so you've got all day long for that to fester and grow in your soul and being before you make things right before the sun goes down. No, that's not what Paul is talking about. He's actually taking an Old Testament precedent here and adapting it. In the Old Testament, there are many uses of this phrase, before the sun goes down. You can look in Deuteronomy, for example, and there are times when if you're dealing with a person who is poor, when you're employing a person who is poor, you need to pay them before the sun goes down, because they may need that. If you've borrowed something from someone, you need to return it before the sun goes down, so that they're not without it the next day. So Paul seems to adapt to this Old Testament precedent. He says, deal with it by sundown. Deal with it in a timely way. When we get angry, we need to deal with it promptly, decisively. Deal with it. Do business with your anger before the sun goes down. Not a literal before the sun goes down. I know many of you probably use it that way, and if that works for you, great. But the point is, in a timely way. Second of all, and you may have just breezed over this one, but we need to deal with it. Not just let it go. Not to quote a recent children's movie targeted at young girls who I happen to have two of, the movie Frozen. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Let it go. No, we need to deal with it. I've given counsel to people that if I had a chance to go back and do it differently, I probably wouldn't tell them just to let it go initially. I think there's some other things that we need to go through first. Paul says we need to deal with it. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't just bury your anger, because you and I both know unresolved anger festers. Bitterness grows. And out of that, a hardened heart is developed. And friends, it's so difficult to go back once you get to that point. Attitudes change, thoughts change. It's so much harder to go back at that point. It becomes a spiritual problem. Yeah, it's an emotional problem, it's a health problem, but it is also very much a spiritual problem. We need to deal with our anger. Who's supposed to deal with our anger? Who's the responsibility fall on? The one who made us angry? Paul says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. The literal idea here is, do not let the sun set on the provocation of you. On the provocation of you, do not. It's addressed to us, friends. It doesn't matter if I'm angry because, you know, something happened to me or I caused the anger, whatever it is I'm supposed to deal with the anger. We can say, well, I'm just waiting for him or her to come to me. They're supposed to be the more mature one. Friend, Paul says, even if you're the one who's angered, it's your responsibility. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. I have to tell you, there are times in life where I've been on both the giving and the receiving end. And at times I didn't know. You know, I did something, I said something, and someone came to me later on and said, do you know that what you did really hurt me? Do you know that what you did really made me angry? I am thankful that they did so, because I don't want to have differences between us, and sometimes we don't know, do we? But when I am on the receiving end, so much more important that I go and I say, you know, I'd like to deal with this. I'd like to find a way to resolve this. The book of Romans does say, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, you have a big responsibility there. If it depends on you, be at peace with everyone. The responsibility is on us. We're supposed to admit it. We do get angry at times. We need to understand, what's the difference here? What's righteous anger? What's unrighteous anger? We need to deal with it in a timely manner. You've got stories, but I have another one to share with you. Two of our staff members in Mexico, one was a U.S. missionary, one was a foreign national. And I share a lot of stories from Mexico because that's the longest period of time of ministry that we've had. And if I share any stories from here, you'll know who I'm talking about, right? So, a couple staff members down there, and 5 years we served together as team members. But these two guys could not get along. And there came a point where I had talked with each of them and worked with each of them, and they didn't even know why they were angry with one another. They were just angry with one another. I'm sure something had happened at some point in the past, and they hadn't dealt with it. And so it just festered and matured and grew, and they were just angry with one another. We have to deal with it. Don't let it go. Otherwise, we'll get to the point where we may not even remember why. Number four, the fourth step is, Paul says, we're supposed to control it. Don't give the devil opportunity. Your Bible may say foothold. The idea here is a place, a space, a room. Don't give the devil a place. When we get angry, especially when we sin in our anger, when we get angry in an ungodly way, friends, we give the devil a room. We give him a foot in the door. Perhaps I could explain it this way. It's the Trojan horse that Satan uses to get a foothold, to get in our lives. Paul says, in your anger, don't sin. But when you do sin, deal with it promptly. Don't let the sun go down. Don't give the devil a foothold. Otherwise, it's like posting a big welcome sign that says, come on in, Satan. I'll leave the light on for you. Deal with it. Friends, I promise you, if you get angry in an ungodly way, if you don't deal with it promptly, the devil will use it against you. Satan will use it to try and possibly succeed at destroying you. He will use it to destroy your relationships with other people, possibly destroy other people as well. He will use it to destroy your testimony. He will take you down piece by piece. He will use it to try and destroy the church. And Paul says, in your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Do not give the devil a foothold. We know anger usually leads to other sins as well. Not only will it lead to other sins, but Satan will get a hold of you. He will take control of you. And it is a long road back at times. So Paul says, we've got to admit it, we've got to understand it, we've got to deal with it, we've got to control it. Do not let Satan have a home. You may recognize this language from other verses in the New Testament. 1 Peter 5:8. Be self-controlled and alert. Why? Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And I could give you story after story, and you could tell me story after story of where someone has allowed their anger to slowly chip away and eventually devour them. You know people who've harbored anger, bitterness, rage, a grudge for way too long. They should have dealt with it. They should still deal with it. We've given Satan a place. We've given him a foothold. And not only are these other things true, but friends, it's the opposite of what God would have us do or how to be. Galatians 5:22, the fruit of the Spirit, who we are indwelled with, right? But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Anger's not mentioned there, is it? Now, while God may use anger, and while there may be a proper time for anger and a proper way to react in anger, friends, it's sure not one of the fruit of the Spirit. It's probably few and far between that it's effective. So what do we do with a passage like this? How do we apply it to our lives? Because we get angry. It's going to happen. We need to deal with it. So how do we deal with it? I want to give you just a few ideas this morning. Six quick things that we'll cross through pretty efficiently. And some of these may not hit you straight on. You may think, well, that would never work for me. And that's okay. But I'm hoping just a few of them do. The first one is just stop and collect yourself. Stop and gather yourself. Get your composure. And you know, we tell our kids this all the time. But Thomas Jefferson had a great way to deal with anger. He said, if you get angry, count to 10. If you're really angry, count to 100. And there may even be times that you need to count beyond that. We do, though. We tell our kids to stop, gather yourself, count to 10. James 1:19 tells us we're supposed to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Stop and gather yourself. Am I doing this for selfish reasons? What's going on here? Number two, pray. Really, when's the last time that when you started to get angry, you just stopped and you said, God, how would you have me deal with this situation? Not what I want to do, but God, what ought I do as a Christian man, as a Christian woman, as a son, as a daughter of the King? How ought I handle this situation? God, it's getting the best of me and I don't want that to happen. How can I deal with this? Romans 12:19 says this, leave room for God's wrath. What does that mean? Maybe it's something God needs to deal with and you just need to let it be. Talk to God about it. Leave room for God's wrath. Number three, and I've done this quite a bit through the years, but hear me out on this. Maybe it's a moment where you can ask someone for some good godly counsel. And what I mean by that is, I would suggest, my words here, you find someone, or you already have someone, who is an older, wiser, mature Christian individual who is going to give you biblical and godly counsel. Why is that so important? Because sometimes our first instinct is to go and to ask plenty of people what they think we ought to do. And you and I both know that plenty of people will oftentimes give us poor, unbiblical, ungodly counsel. Have one or two people that you seek godly advice for in situations like this. Oftentimes just talking with someone else helps bring it out, doesn't it? I mean, as we hear ourselves talking through a situation, sometimes we realize how foolish or how ridiculous it really is that we're getting so upset about something. Write it out. I haven't done this very often, but maybe you can write it out. Sometimes we want to go and talk to someone or give them a phone call. But friends, I would suggest you write it out. Write out what you're upset about. What it is that you want to talk to them about. Now the dangerous thing is in our age of technology, you can type it out and you can hit send and then you can not retrieve it because it's gone. It's already on its way through their email or Facebook or text, whatever it is. But maybe you can write it out, and as you read through that and reword it, you can realize, okay, this is a bad idea. I need to go and talk with him in person about this. Whatever it is, but maybe you can write it out. Also believe we need to go. Sometimes we want to stay away from conflict. We want to avoid conflict or confrontation at all costs. But Paul says we need to deal with it. So we need to go. But here's the point. Here's the key point, the important part. Not just go, but go with the intention of making things better. I've been on the receiving end of counsel. Seth, what do you think I ought to do about this situation? I said, well, what are you hoping to gain? Well, truth come out. I want to hear them say that they were wrong. I want an apology. Friends, that's not the motivation that we ought to take to go and seek to make things better. Sometimes we will not get to the core truth. Sometimes we will not get our apology that we're seeking. Sometimes our name may not be cleared. But we ought to go, and we ought to go with the goal of making things better, our relationship with them. And here we're to this other point that I mentioned earlier. We need to learn to forgive. There will be times, there will be situations that we are, as much as it concerns us, we're not capable of fully resolving it. And we need to learn to forgive. We need to let it go. Book of Romans, as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. There's an old proverb, not to be confused with the Proverbs, but it says this: he who angers you controls you. He who angers you controls you. When someone has made you angry, until that's dealt with, oftentimes, if not always, that consumes your every thought, your every moment. He who angers you controls you. Let it not be in your life that way. We need to go, we need to deal with things in a proper manner, in a timely manner, in a godly manner. But sometimes we need to recognize, I'm going to have to let this one go. Now, that's number six, and I put it there for a reason. I think we're called to do other things before it gets there. We cannot just avoid it. We need to deal with it. But once we have, the moment may come where we need to say, I'm no longer going to let this become a bitterness or resentment or grow in my life. I'm going to let it go. So Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 and 27 again. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. And do not give the devil a foothold. Deal with it properly, timely. Otherwise, we give Satan room to work. And he has plenty of room to work, doesn't he? This passage was written roughly 2,000 years ago. And yet it hits us right between the eyes today. I just want to ask you this morning, is there someone in your life that maybe you need to go to and you need to ask forgiveness from because of some anger that has taken place between the two of you? Is there someone that you need to forgive because there's been some anger between the two of you? Friends, don't let the devil get or keep his foothold in your life. Deal with it. Let's pray together.